Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We don't charge a penny. Yeah. We can't call in. Top star, free balling.
Hold up. We literally just cut off a conversation before we started recording. You not watching this season of Mandalorian yet?
No, I've seen the first couple of episodes. I haven't seen the most recent just because I got busy.
Okay.
But like I'm trying to find time to sit down and watch it because like my brother and my sister have been bugging me, like, when are we going to watch it? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, we'll see. We'll make it work. We'll see what happens. But no, I've seen the first episode or two. But yeah, you were saying, like, Bo-Katan is basically outshining.
Oh, 100%. Like, I don't know if filming this season of Mandalorian clashed with the filming of The Last of Us. But it is definitely, like, this season is definitely, like, Bo-Katan. Like, this whole season, like, I will sit on this hill and I will die on this hill and tell you right now the protagonist of the show is Bo-Katan.
Nice.
Like, the main story of what you want to happen this season revolves around, like, her being able to do it. And all honesty, like, Mando is... Like, he's in conversations and he appears, but he's literally just part of that, like, sort of creed now. Like, it was better when he was exiled. Now he's just now he's just one of the people. It's honestly, just go watch the series, and I think this season is definitely it's Marmite. It's a love it or you hate it. But there's definitely been backlash over this week's episode. Like, I thought it was a joke when I saw it online. Like, I thought people were like, yo, April Fool's was, like, a few days ago. Like, what are you talking about? And I didn't even see the episode. I had to ask a friend. I was like, look, I know you've seen it. And I was like, please tell me this is a joke. And he goes, yeah, nah. So I went ahead and watched the episode, and I was like, oh. I definitely struggled through it. I definitely should have put it down and just gone back to... finish off shrinking something good, like shrinking.
Yo,
is
how good is that show though?
I had no idea how much I was gonna like right now, even though we have 3.5 seasons of Ted Lasso. I'm definitely more of a shrinking fan, 100%. How real that series feels,
in
terms of like the way the characters just like live their lives around each other, and they act like, you know, they apologize for shit they do wrong, they apologize for shit they have done wrong, like, and then they get angry with each other, like actual real emotions, not overacted, not underacted. And Jason Segel and Harrison Ford, like, I just need them in every TV ever from now until Harrison dies.
It's like it's a comedy duo that you don't really ever think of. It's like in the great, you know, straight man funny guy pairings, fucking Harrison Ford and Jason Segel, but it works and they work so well off of each other. Harrison Ford looks like he's having a phenomenal time. The episode where he gets baked is so good.
That was the last episode I watched.
Hi, Harrison Ford.
So I've got I'm pretty sure the second half of the season to go, and like as much as I want it to like keep me laughing, I'm pretty sure I need to sort of buckle in for a little bit of heartbreak within there as well, because this is a Bill Lawrence show. Like,
yeah,
there's going to be some. Oh, I see you have some heartstrings. Let me just play them like a fine guitar. No, Bill, no. You've already ruined Nathan, you dick. Nate the Great. Now Nate the Twat. Yeah, speaking of Nate the Great and Ted Lasso, this season of Ted Lasso ain't slapping for me.
It's not.
And yeah, nah, it's really not. Like, it is no longer a comedy show.
I definitely find its moments, but I definitely feel like season two is definitely a high. So I'm just afraid that it peaked in season two. Because I get what you mean. Because it doesn't, I don't know. Like the first episode, I enjoyed it, but it didn't. There's just something missing in this season.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, I know what you mean. Like, I love like the new character they've brought in, Zava.
This
Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Cristiano Ronaldo type character. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's a good addition. But like we already know, this is the last season of Ted Lasso, and like they're introducing so many new characters. And I was like, "Yo, like who's the Juno Temple's character? She has like Champagne or Charlene?
Oh, Shandy or something like that.
How forgettable her character is! We can't even remember her fucking name. Do not need it, bro. There's like a whole like one of the episodes, she's like, "Oh, do you want me to take my top off and run around?" I was like, "Don't make those jokes, man. Like, you're better than you know. You're not that show. You're better than that."
I'm pretty sure like her character is just there to show, you know, Juno Temple's character that
she how the growth
that's what
she's,
she could have been.
Yeah, like yeah. So okay, that's yeah. Sebastian's paying more attention this season than I. Like, I'm definitely checked out. I'm watching it because of what Ted Lasso meant to me. But, like, you know, say something else starts. Like, Succession just died. I'm more inclined to, like, keep up with that on a weekly basis. Like, I'd be more than happy to let Ted Lasso play itself out. And then I can binge it in my own time. Mm-hmm. But then I don't want to get it spoiled. Like, I've liked and retweeted enough of Ted Lasso stuff that, like, you know, whatever comes out in an episode, it like Twitter's going to be like, "Oh, did you see this on Ted Lasso Twitter?" No.
It's
fucked up algorithm piece of shit. Like,
it's sometimes, dude, I swear, like the episode drops and like 30 people are like, it's like, "How do you already know this? It just dropped."
People watching that shit on 2.5 times speed.
For real.
Everyone sounds like Alvin the Chipmunk. So.
I gotta tweet first.
Now that we've just finished talking about that shit, you know how this is the second take of us trying this? And in the first take, you said how hard it was to go to what we actually wanted to talk about? How hard is it now, Sebastian?
That's what she said. Got him!
The Blue Beetle trailer, everyone. Wasn't it great? There's your segue. I did it for you.
Segue. Oh, so we were doing this the first time around. I got stuck because I couldn't remember the word segue.
Just remember some douchebag, like, with slick hair, glasses, riding around Silicon Valley. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I gotta get the new iPhone. Oh, my God.
Those things are so pretentious. It's genuinely, whenever I see someone fall off of one, I just lose myself. The laughter is too much. And it's amazing. I hate this thing. It's so stupid.
It's on par with the Vine hoverboard fails from like 2014, yep. 2015. They were hilarious, bro. Just like random ass kids like reversing into their kitchen wall, and there's just like a kid shaped hole. Twat, pay for that. You'll be taking out the garbage for the next 2 years.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of hilarious, Blue Beetle trailer.
It looks so good. I hope James Gunn finds a way to make this canon to what he wants to do with the rest of his DCEU, or whatever they're calling it now. Just whatever James Gunn's doing with DC, I hope Blue Beetle's part of it, because the main guy is Zolo Miranda?
I think Marjorie or something like that.
Yeah, the guy from Cobra Kai. It's nice to see him in something else. He's definitely aging like fine wine. Like, please forever keep a beard. I'm not gay, but yes. And he looks like he's nailing this character out of the park. I know you have lots to say about the Blue Beetle trailer, so take us to the finest places, Sebastian.
Well, my biggest thing was like the representation in the trailer alone. Like, I was like, I counted 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe, you know, Latin characters, and they all seem like they're going to be lead characters. So that's definitely a huge thing, and it's great to see it, especially in, like, this is the first time.
It's the first, you know, it's the first of its kind, like live action. That's the thing, like, Latino-led superhero movie.
Well, live action, because obviously Spider-Man across Inside the Spider-Verse and all of that stuff.
We'll get to it, people. We'll get to it.
So, because that's honestly a major debate on Twitter. I saw after the Blue Beetle trailer dropped, it's like people were saying it's so great to see he's the first Latin superhero. It's like Miles Morales. He had a movie. It's like, yeah, but it was a cartoon. It's like, yeah, but the movie still fucking exists.
Yeah.
So it is representation, and it's a first because it is the first time a live action Latin superhero is like fucking front and center, and, you know, in a movie. So that's pretty dope.
It's about fucking time.
Yeah, no, for real.
The fact that, like, Michael Mando has been out here busting his butt for Latino representation, and, like, all he has to show for it in terms of superhero movies is possibly he was Scorpion at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming, that nothing ever happened with after that.
Yeah. No, it just went fucking nowhere.
Like, they were always, like, I don't want to say they, like, you know what I mean, like, Latino representation in superhero movies, it was mostly villainous roles.
Yeah.
And that's, like...
Yeah, pretty much.
That, you know, what, here comes Captain America, like, here comes Iron Man.
it's funny that, you know, we're talking about the villain, because from what I saw in the trailer, Susan Sarandon is the villain of the movie. So it's essentially the white lady versus the little Mexican kid who stole her shit.
Yep.
I'm accurate. All for it. Like, I got into Blue Beetle when I was watching Young Justice, because he's become like a very prominent character in the show. So I always thought he was cool. And like, when I was thinking about, like, oh, I would love to see a movie, and I saw that was announced, I was like, oh shit, that would be so dope.
And I was like, my, Loki, you know, he was my main in Injustice 2.
He's so good. Like, it's definitely the right character, the right iteration of the character for the right time. And I think it's going to be great. It looks dope, so I'm excited for it.
The casting and then, looks, you know, to be spot on.
And just honestly, dude, like, we talked about it before we hopped on, but the best bit of that trailer was George Lopez calling Batman a fascist.
Batman's a fascist, bro.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. I wonder which Batman they're talking about, though. That's what we need to know. Like,
that's what we need to know, that we won't know until after fucking Flashpoint.
Shh. she?
Then we'll know.
Then we'll
know. It's either Keaton or Affleck. One of them's a fascist.
Or whatever Frank Grillo has been cast in.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. He made the jump because he says he's been cast as a role in James Gunn's new superhero lineup. He's not allowed to say who. So NDA's out the wazoo. But like on his way out, he was like, yo, like I loved Crossbones, but they fucking handled it poorly. Fuck you guys. And I'm like, actually, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They did my boy Crossbones dirty.
It was like a blink and you'll miss it in Civil War. And it was just like, he made him seem like such a badass in Winter Soldier, and you made him go out like a bitch. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. Like, not the only character Marvel's handling poorly right now. Yeah. You know how last week we talked about the Marvels? Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Sorry. This vitamin water is fucking giving me the burps. I've been drinking it a bit too fast. It's too nice. We were talking about how movies and TV shows are being delayed due to VFX. Mm-hmm. Apparently, for the Marvels, that whole VFX delay was bullshit. The Marvels has been delayed because it's screening absolutely dog shit.
Jesus.
Like that, so we already know the problem with the everyday American audience and a global audience as well reacting poorly to the overly feminist Marvel Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah.
How did Marvel try to fix that? By adding in a black Captain Marvel and a Muslim Captain Marvel. So not only now can we call you homophobic and misogynistic, if you hate the Marvels, guess what? You're racist now. Like, oh, thanks. Great. Like, maybe just don't make a dog shit movie, man. You've got three great characters there that literally blend into each other perfectly. You have a story that they blend into perfectly. How is this movie testing so badly?
Just don't fuck it up, man.
I think they fucked it up, bro.
there's a part of me that wants to be excited because, you know, Captain Marvel didn't hit all that hard, but you know, seeing her in Endgame and stuff, that I thought she was great.
I love Brie Larson's Captain excited. Marvel. I think she's awesome. I love Brie Larson as an actor.
Her character, the story of Miss Marvel was like
hit or miss.
But I love Brie Larson. I think she's great as Captain Marvel. I loved Miss Marvel. The show was so good.
I think like Miss Marvel was one of the better.
It's MCU so good shows. And like, you know, Kamala Khan's a hilarious character, and you know, seeing that, I want to be excited for it. So I'm hoping shit gets fixed. But what I am just completely ecstatic to see Across the Spider-Verse, that trailer. Fuck. Welcome back.
Thank you. No, I like that movie looks angelically good. If 2018 Into the Spider-Verse was, like, I think between me and most people I know, not just best animated movie of that year, but best movie of that year, Across the Spider-Verse, like, just that one moment in the trailer where they do, like, they recreate the meme. You?
Capture Spider-Man. Was amazing. Yeah.
And then you've got, like, the fact that in, like, 2012, they're like, do you remember the Spoderman meme? Like, someone misdrew Spider-Man, so it became, like, Spoderman. He makes an appearance in the trailer. Like, someone made that shit for a joke, and it becomes so pivotal to the history of Spider-Man that they thought, yeah, let's put it in. Like, and they were so convinced that this movie was going to be so good that they delayed it so they could get Tom Holland in to come do a cameo. They were like, yo, you want to be in this. Every version of Spider-Man we know, every version of Spider-Man you can think of, whether it's like 0.5 seconds or 2 seconds, is in this movie, and like, I hope Spider-Man doesn't peak with this movie. Is all I can say.
Fuck, dude, that's Jesus.
But it has peak kind of written all over it.
So we were talking about Latin representation earlier with Blue Beetle, and we were kind of hinting at it with this trailer.
Her mom snaps at Miles, and it's in the Puerto Rico flag. I love that little bit. Like, that is just a nice little detail. Because they're shitting on him because he's failing Spanish.
No, it's not even, he gets a B in Spanish. And smack. And I was just like,
he's passing.
I legit, dude, I swear to God, I had some fucking PTSD, bro. There's times where I had gotten a B in Spanish, and my mom and my dad were like, why the fuck are you getting a B in Spanish? I don't know. You speak it. You never taught me to read it and write it.
I'm working in filmmaking now. I failed film studies in college. I had to drop out so I couldn't do the second year so I could focus on drama.
Oh, dude, that shit hit me so hard. That shit was so fucking funny. So I'm like, it adds to it, and I thought it was really dope. So I'm telling you, dude, super, super amped.
I would just want to know what has Miles Morales done in this movie that even Hailee Steinfeld's Gwen Stacy's Spider-Girl is chasing him alongside Oscar Isaac?
Yeah.
That's mad. This trailer raises so many questions. So does the Blue Beetle trailer. I'm looking forward to both movies. I hope they both slap. Both movies are looking to be a fucking good time. I may need correcting on this. I hope Across the Spider-Verse is so good that it's the first animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, no, that would hit.
I don't know. Like, I am not too sure if an animated movie has been nominated for maybe Pinocchio this year. Are you Googling it real quick?
I am indeed.
Thank you. I can see his little face, everyone. Like, he's not even looking at me. He's typing away. He's focused, Sebastian. Focus.
Focus.
I was about to keep the people busy with a like, you know, fucking song and dance, bro. You've interrupted me.
Because we were talking about, you know, obviously it being nominated for Best Picture, and I'm hoping that'd be dope, but like, I knew that there was another movie that had been an animated one, and it was the animated Beauty and the Beast. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, but Beauty and the Beast can do one. Both versions.
Yeah, but I mean, it did. So it took the first spot from, you know, Across the Spider-Verse.
Well, that was then, this is now. I wasn't here for Beauty and the Beast, I'm here for Across the Spider-Verse. So Beauty and the Beast, good for you, don't give a shit.
No.
Across the Spider-Verse means more to the people.
I'm just like, I imagine it meant to the people of 1991.
Yeah, but no.
Neither of us existed at that point, so who cares?
You know who did exist at that point? This is the weirdest segue of all time. Donald Trump, everyone. He's been indicted. isn't it 34 charges totaling 135 years behind bars if charged for all of them? And it's like,
yep,
it's fraud,
falsifying business records,
and like paying people off of some shit. Like,
Stormy Daniels,
yeah. Like, so during his 2016 presidential run, he was like bribing, illegal bribes and shit. Even though, like, the main thing in 2016 was, like, I don't actually have any money. Was like, yeah, because you're fucking bribing all these people, bro. That's what happens when you subscribe to too many OnlyFans, Donald. You know, that all those 29.99 a month, they add up, bro. Not, you know, not that I know. Your Honor, shit. I'm going down.
Have you
Donald,
seen, like,
take me with you.
Have you seen footage of, like, the protests out there? You know, like, people protesting, obviously, against him, but obviously for him as well. It's fucking crazy.
It's as bad as the 2016 protests, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. It's worse, man, because I honestly think it's worse because we've seen what, you know, his
the
fanatics
effect he has on people
are willing to do for him. Like, we, you know, June 6th, you fucking almost overthrew the government because of this fucking guy. So it's like,
yep.
I don't know, man. There's it's scary because, like, I saw a clip of, what the fuck is her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene, or I think her name is.
Yeah.
She was like, she was calling this a historic win for Trump and his stuff. And I'm like, well,
oh, her and everyone on Fox News, bro, is like,
she had the gall to compare this motherfucker to Nelson Mandela.
Yep.
And Jesus Christ.
So someone compared him to Tupac and Biggie. He's the Tupac and Biggie of our time. It's like, I don't know about you, bro, but, like, Donald Trump is white as fuck.
he's white with a very orange hue.
Yeah. But what, like, you were talking about the protests. What I have seen in the protest is this Photoshop mugshot he's released. So the reason that is because he never actually got a mugshot, because the police don't need one. So mugshots are something the police decide if they need it. So if you think of, like, you know, Snoop Dogg has a mugshot, Bill Gates has a mugshot, Steve Jobs has a mugshot. But when they had their mugshots, when they were getting arrested, they weren't who they are now. So, and plus, yeah, you got to think, there wasn't a lot of CCTV, there wasn't mobiles in every cameras, there wasn't social media out the wazoo. So all these people, like, if they thought, okay, that person might fuck off, so we need a photo of them so that if we do ever find them again, we can get them down for this. But the problem is with Donald Trump, he's fucking everywhere. I'm pretty sure you can't even go 42 hours without seeing something about this motherfucker.
He was the president of the United States. Everyone knows what this fucking guy looks like.
Off every social media platform, his face was still making it on there. He was still loud as fuck.
Yep.
Then you got the whole Mar-a-Lago thing that happened before Christmas. Like, come on, bro. Like, this motherfucker's not helped himself. But yeah, so he never got a mugshot. So he was like, oh, fuck, the one thing I did want from all this, I'm not getting. So he makes one himself on, like, fucking Microsoft Paint or some shit, saying that he's not guilty. And everyone's out here, it's like, it's the new Che Guevara. It's the new... No, it's not. Because...
It's just... I don't know, man. He's a figure. He's essentially the figurehead of a very...
I would be worried.
Very scary time.
I would be worried in America if he's charged for even one of these 34 counts. The backlash will be seen and heard. The revolution, yep, as it's been said, will be televised.
And it's like, it's not even a revolution for progress. It's a revolution for, you know, regression.
Regression, 100%.
Yep. Speaking of regression.
Damn. Where are we going with this?
I don't know if you heard, but I obviously, you know, I'm a huge wrestling fan. We haven't really spoken about it a whole lot. But, you know, WrestleMania was this past weekend and...
It looked awesome.
So much shit happened. So I just want to talk about the good stuff first, and then we'll talk about everything else.
Everything that's happened after.
Yeah, so WrestleMania 2 nights, great fucking show, great fucking matches. Night 2 ended on such a sour fucking note, though. Like, it fucking snowballed from there.
Oh, shit.
But, like, the number that So one of the big things that kind of stood out to me, though, over the course of two nights, they had a total of 161,892 people attend WrestleMania.
That's because SoFi is fucking huge.
Yeah. No, but it's like, it's, you know, combining both. It's like, it's still, it's over 80,000 people per night.
Yeah.
So it's like, holy shit, it's fucking crazy. But like, last, the final match, you know, the person who goes over and wins the match, nobody wanted. Story logic thrown out the fucking window.
Oh, was that Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes?
Yeah. So, you know, Roman winning and holding onto his title again.
Ugh.
And like, I've heard people talk about it, how like the first night you see Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens win the tag team championships and everyone's losing their minds. There are people sticking around, celebrating with them. They're cheering them on as they're walking up the ramp, losing their shit. Night two, Roman gets 1, 2, 3. Match is over. People can't get out of there quick enough, dude. They're so done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. It was bad. And like, so this comes, and like the very next day it was announced that Endeavor, who owns the UFC, and as well as William Morris, you know, one of the biggest talent agents in the world.
Yeah. William Morris Endeavor.
Yeah, William Morris Endeavor has bought the WWE.
Wait, so UFC owns WWE now?
Well, Endeavor owns WWE and UFC. Like, they're going to be...
And so the plan is them?
Yes, they're going to merge them into a, quote, global live sports and entertainment company. That's going to be worth $21 billion.
One couldn't be fighting in a more real sense. The other one is fake fighting, for the most part, with a story.
Mm-hmm. The difference, though, is the live event, because UFC does not get live attendance numbers like the fucking WWE does.
No, absolutely.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's they're merging both companies. You know, the UFC was apparently valued at $12.1 billion. WWE had a $9.3 billion evaluation. So the new company that's going to be coming of that is going to be worth $21 billion.
Can I get some of that?
Which is, you know, like from a business standpoint, you know, it's a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And I guess it makes kind of sense. From a wrestling fan perspective, I can't think of a worse fucking way to start essentially a new season of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Because the second this was announced, Vince McMahon, who retired last year in disgrace because of sexual assault and, you know, harassment and hush money things, same as the fucking president or former president. Has essentially be reinstalled to his position. He will effectively be, he'll work as the chairman for the new company.
Yeah.
The guy who owns Endeavor is going to remain the CEO. And for the most part, from what I've heard on CNBC is that UFC and WWE will be run separately.
Okay.
But that Endeavor's planning on running the UFC playbook in WWE, whatever the fuck that means. But the biggest takeaway is that they have allowed Vince McMahon to essentially regain control of the creative for WWE.
So all the work Triple H has spent doing for better part of a year, rebuilding what was essentially a dying franchise to the point where people have been loud online saying how great it's been, basically, as just, okay, cool. Fucking do one.
He did it. He's already done it. Ugh. The Raw after WrestleMania, I attended live.
Yeah.
It was great being there. And I love the show and everything. And I love watching everyone there because I'm a huge fan. But after the excitement of it wore off, everything that I saw, which I settled in, I was like, that is not a good show. That was a dog shit show. Nothing really happened. No new stories, no nothing. And then you go home and I start reading, you know, because I read dirt sheets and I read news about wrestling and stuff. Vince McMahon, day one, he came in, he tore up the script, he made changes to everything. There were apparently like two or three different women's matches that were supposed to be happening with some significance. He said, fuck that. He gave them one match. 3 hours of television, dude, and there were women in the ring and on screen for like 10 minutes, if that.
Okay, so yeah, when you mentioned aggression, you fucking meant it,
dude. I can't. How does one undo 8 months of work in a single night? It is fucking ridiculous. Absolutely fucking ridiculous, dude.
He's a creature of habit. Greed. Misogyny.
It doesn't even feel like habit at this point. It feels like spite.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can you be so spiteful to the audience, man?
Yeah.
Without them, you have nothing.
And like, he's like Vince is definitely out there saying, it's like, oh, I am wrestling. Mm-hmm. He's probably like, those words have probably uttered from his mouth. But like, no one likes this motherfucker anymore.
Oh, no. He was being interviewed by CNBC talking about the sale. And he was asked about, you know, the sexual harassment claims and the hush money and all that stuff.
Mm.
And this man who's rocking the stupidest fucking mustache, dude, I swear, outside of knowing who he is, he looks like a cartoon villain from like the Rocky and Bullwinkle series.
Someone posted he has the hat from like the Street Fighter villain. With the cap, like he looks like if you give him the right cap, he literally looks like the general Captain Street Fighter
Bison.
Bison, he looks like fucking Bison right now.
Jesus. No, so he was asked about all this stuff. He's like, yeah, you know, I've made mistakes. It's like, this motherfucker just brushed off sexual harassment and paying to like people to not talk about it. What a piece of shit. What a piece of shit.
Okay. Do we want to go to a break so you could cool off for a sec, my guy?
Yeah, no, let's go to a break. We'll go to a break, I'll cool off, and then we'll talk about some stuff. Tell them what we're talking about, bro.
So we're going to be talking about, well, it's going to be something that's going to trigger me. Because we're going to be talking about the divide between just this pandemic of critics versus the audience on Rotten Tomatoes, and why it's so... Well, it's been bad, but it's getting out of hand now.
All right. We'll be right back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So I told Grandma I didn't even want bacon in the bathtub. Oh, hi, everybody.
hold up. I'm trying to picture that scenario. Explain that shit.
I was trying to do that, like, sort of, you know, getting caught at the end of a conversation when you got to start a new one. You're not expecting anyone to hear. And it's like, no, Grandma, I don't want any more bacon. Oh, hi. How you doing? I did see you there.
Why? Don't want any bacon in the bathtub, Grandma.
Don't want any bacon in the bathtub, Grandma. Put your fucking clothes on. Shit. Get your...
This scenario is layered,
get
dude.
Get your tits out of my face, Grandma. Damn.
Christ.
God, why does it smell like tuna in here now?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I can keep that going longer than you know. Right, so
that's what she said. Got him. Got him.
Fuck's sake.
Oh, she was good though. God damn.
You guys made me ink.
Right. So we're talking. We're talking mostly Rotten Tomatoes based shit on why the critics are reviewing movies so poorly, but yet audiences are seeing these movies and are beginning to see them for what they are, which is entertainment. So why are audiences like more? Why are audiences going to these movies for why they are being made? Movies are a form of entertainment. Mm-hmm. Art is a form of entertainment. I know some people that'd rather go to a gallery than go to a movie theater. I get it. TV, a form of entertainment. Music, a form of entertainment. All of these things have reviews. Unfortunately, all of these things come with critics. Mostly, you're talking The Guardian, The Hollywood Reporter, Entertainment Tonight, TMZ, Variety, Forbes, Screen Rant, all that kind of shit. IGN of all fucking places.
Internet gaming news should not review TV or movies.
Sorry, just I will just live and die on that hill. But the big one, the one that makes most of the noise, the one that movies are now starting to include in their after release trailers. So sometimes a movie will make a new trailer after it's been released, sort of like with the who's giving it good stars, who, you know, sort of taglines from certain reviewers. But the big one is, are you certified fresh?
Yeah.
Like,
That happen?
I think Rotten Tomatoes has just done it. Not Rotten Tomatoes. Dungeons and Dragons. They've just released their after release trailer, and they're like, sort of, we're certified fresh. But I'm pretty sure it is. Are you about to fucking?
Oh no! I'm just curious because like. No, look, because I'm on their site and stuff, but and it says, you know, 25. Like, they've been around for 25 years. It just feels like they're a very recent thing.
Oh, yeah. And so, like, oh, I see what you mean. I kind of misunderstood your question there. So, like, I would say Rotten Tomatoes have been a problem within the last 5 years, I would say. In terms of reviewing movies, they've been a problem for the last 5 years because everyone seemed to agree with them. But now we're starting to sort of, people are starting to form their own opinions, which is what we want. That's fucking great.
I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot of movies in the last half decade or so that have just been pushing the Rotten Tomatoes score so hard.
Yeah.
And like, when did it become to like, you need to live or die by this? Like that's my question, I guess. Like, it just blows my mind because, like, I've literally never given a shit about a review, but then I see this stuff being thrown in my face, and I'm like, it makes you wary. That's one of the reasons I never read reviews.
It shouldn't alter my choice of seeing a movie or not, but with, you know, the recession that we're currently living through, just people aren't prepared to really say it.
You got to pick and choose.
You can't spend what is, for some families, a lot of money on a movie that may have bad reviews. Even though you should still see that movie at your own accord. But I can imagine there's definitely, you know, the average Tom, Dick and Harry out there that, you know, they don't have a lot of free money at the end of the month, who only go to see a movie every now and then, they may be like, oh, I want to go see Mario. But one of them may turn around and say, no, I don't want to see Mario. It's only got 54 on Rotten Tomatoes. But then you have the other friend who then goes, yeah, but it's got a 96 audience score. So what do you do then? And that brings us to our listicle for today. We're starting with Mario. Yep. It currently sits at a 54 critic score, which means that's a Rotten Tomato, bro. You don't want to eat that shit. You don't want to put it on your sandwich. Basically, critics are saying, do not go to see this movie. whereas audiences have now seen this movie. Now, you've got to remember, with Rotten Tomatoes, critics get to see this movie first.
Yeah.
In these preview showings, there's not a lot of average cinema goers. I know, what was that one cinema chain that used to do it quite a lot? Arclight. Arclight did like audience previews. You could, it was pretty easy to get tickets from time to time, but rip Arclight. So the audience score will always come out a day or two later. So even before, like, if you know, if it's like, oh, you know, off the trailer, you know, I want to go see this movie. Then you see the critic score and you're like, hang on, maybe this movie ain't the one. But then in that space of time, within 2 days, you've changed your mind and right now you want to go see John Wick 4 instead. If you're the right age range, you know, the eight-year-olds going to see Mario aren't going to go see John Wick 4, although I would love to see their reaction. But now it's a 96 audience score, which means the right people have gone to see this movie and have said, actually, this has been misreviewed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got to sit there, you got to form your own choice, you got to form your own opinion, and then you got to think, why is Mario been reviewed so poorly? Apparently, the pacing's off. It goes from reference to reference. It goes from Easter egg to Easter egg. It goes from action to action. It's overly girl empowered in what is a Mario movie, and apparently Bowser goes like the accent's a little bit all over the place for Bowser. But then you got to realize Mario. If it feels like a movie that's going a million miles per hour, of course it is. It's for fucking kids.
Yeah.
Why have critics have literally gone to this movie and have expected, like, I don't know, the Adventures of Tintin levels of animated movies? No, it's not. It's designed for 8-year-olds, and clearly the 8-year-olds and the families that have given birth to said 8-year-olds have seen these movies and have gone, yeah, it's Easter holidays. Go take your kids to see this movie. And I think that's, you know, in terms of my first movie, that's where the difference has come here. That's like, that's my point. Like, that's going to be my point. It's like, sort of, why is there a difference between these two scores? And I think that's where this difference comes. Like, there was an expectation of a Mario movie that the critics have just... They just don't get it. They literally just do not get it. In some cases, I don't even know why they've been asked to review it. Think like The Times, The Guardian. Why are they reviewing a Mario movie?
Yeah.
What about your first choice, man? Where are you taking me? I think I can guess though.
Well, just keeping within, you know, kids and, you know, the thinking about the audience and stuff, for like, especially because this pick is also a video game adaptation, is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, shit. Yes. I enjoyed the second one more than the first one.
But I like both. Yeah. I really enjoyed both movies. So, like, Sonic the Hedgehog currently is sitting at a 64% critic and a 93% audience score.
That's there is a noticeable gap there, Sebastian.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, no. Yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure.
I see that thigh gap. I can put my fist through it.
And you know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, obviously, it's a critic's job to criticize the movie and to review the movie, whatever. That's, you know, that's the job. But it's also like, how can you be so harsh? You know, like you were saying, this is a movie for kids. It's going a mile a minute because it needs to keep the attention span of fucking children.
And you know, yes. You know who's going a mile a minute? The blue blur.
Fucking Sonic, dude. Fucking Sonic, dude.
I think there's a good... There's a good separation in that movie as well. Both our movies, actually. Both Mario and Sonic. As to why the critics just don't understand it. Don't get it. You can bet 9 times out of fucking 10... The 80-year-old aging critics that have been chosen to review these movies have not played a single fucking Mario game, have not played a single fucking Sonic game. They just don't understand it. The amount, the some of the people that have reviewed these movies probably don't even understand why.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, I haven't seen Mario yet. I want to see it because I'm very curious about it. So, like,
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
But I've seen Sonic, and obviously there's that thing about, you know, video game adaptations of movies and stuff not being all that great.
Mm.
But I feel like, you know, Sonic that's not was amazing.
That was, like, a huge thing. We already knew, like, I already knew Sonic was going to get reviewed poorly because that was the go-to. Oh, you know,
it's the assumption, right?
Video game adaptations into movies have always been bad and looks like it's continuing. Well, actually, because you think it's bad doesn't mean it is bad.
Like, you know whose opinion I feel like matters more in this scenario? The people who grew up playing the fucking video
games. The people who grew up playing the fucking video games. And the people who make the video games. That's who I want to see review the movie. Let Bandai Namco and Sega see the Sonic movie first. And let them tell us, yeah, this movie's legit. But they, you know, of course they would tell us it's legit. They, you know, because they get more money from it. But, like, you know, people... so that was a bit counterproductive. Like you say, like the people that play the games, like well-known speedrunners, well-known YouTubers. I'm more inclined to listen to reviews from TikTokers. But even then, I'd take it with a grain of salt. Like, you know, the biggest thing to take away from what we're talking about here is, I've mentioned it in passing a few times. You just got to go out and see things. Like, and especially if you go into the movies... Definitely go see what you want to see. Just because someone else hasn't enjoyed something doesn't mean you won't. 100%.
True.
And that's like, with my next movie, I'm actually going to go in the opposite direction, in which the critics did enjoy this movie, but the audience went, hang on, what the fuck was that shit? Movie from last year. Do you remember what you saw in London with me and with you, me and a friend?
Yeah, bodies, bodies, bodies.
Bodies, bodies, bodies. It has an 86 critic score. But it has a 69 audience score. Nice. Sorry, gotta do it. I'm an average male person. I see 69 out there in the wilderness. I'm inclined to go, nice, with a cheeky thumbs up. If I can, I'll post it on my Instagram. But, like, we liked this movie. I really enjoyed this movie. This movie took the idea of a teen slasher party movie and really flipped it upside down. It was a great insight to sort of where some of these horrors are going to go. Even Scream 5, Scream 6 has, like, bodies, bodies, bodies tendencies now. Like, the influencers are involved. Like, you know, they are part of the everyday human now. And especially when it comes to hurricane season in places like Florida, southern Texas, and some of the East Coast, there's, like, you know, the idea of a hurricane party is definitely believable. But the fact that this slasher movie starts when you actually see, like, the reason why it started is revealed at the end, and it's so fucking stupid. Pete Davidson fucking kills himself. And these girls go, because they're on so much drugs, they're on so much alcohol, they've got, like, it's like, oh my God, my anxiety can't take it, all that kind of shit. It's just a good sort of, like, fuck you to the everyday TikToker. It's awesome. But apparently the everyday TikToker didn't agree with this shit. And, like,
they're like, nah, bro, we're good.
Yeah. Like, I put this movie into Rotten Tomatoes because I was researching movies that, like, like, I didn't, like, some movies I know have, like, a gap between their scores. I typed this one in thinking, oh, definitely the critics have hated this and definitely the audiences have loved it. So I'm pleasantly surprised to see the other way. Now, what I haven't done is gone deep into as to why. I can only assume that the audiences that did see it were... Excuse me. I think the problem arose here that the audience score is so a bit out of whack because I think there's either millennials didn't enjoy the movie or the Gen Z didn't like being identified. And I think that's where their score has become a little bit lower. Like the millennials have gone, fuck you. You can dish it out because we quote Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings all the time and give a shit on TikTok and Instagram. But yeah, you're not so fucking good too. There's a good moment in the movie where they all shit on the girl who all she does is a podcast and she's like, look, it's really hard. You've got to plan the guests, you gotta write the schedule. Like, the first 3 months are the hardest. Like, you know, well, we're still here, we're podcasting, but but like they didn't like being identified, and they've gone like, yo, we're not that 2D, I think is the problem. Like, the characters are a little bit one-dimensional in some cases.
I mean for the story it makes sense to have, you know, characters like that. So, but I could also see, you know, you see that, you're like, that ain't me, bruh.
Yeah.
This not me.
When, like, you've got our age who see that movie and gone, yeah, Pete Davidson's just playing Pete Davidson. And of course he kills himself because I'm surprised he hasn't accidentally done it in reality yet. The way he dies in that movie, honestly, like, it could have already happened.
I can see it. Yeah.
Look, on a Saturday Night Live sketch or some shit. Yo, this isn't even a prop. Oh, fuck. Yeah, so that was a pleasant surprise as to, like, in the difference there. My last one really upset me, but we'll get there. What's your next, bro? I'll see if I can get this one.
So my last two are both superhero movies, just because, you know, it's really the only thing that I've seen. And I think
one of them is Ant-Man.
The one I'm about to talk about is Ant-Man.
Yes. I don't know what the other one
but
is.
Like, but I kind of want to touch on, like, you know, you kind of mentioned it earlier, like, you know, having to, you know, it's hard out there. You know, you can't justify really going through a movie as often as you could, especially, like, and it's, I feel like for us doing what we do, going to the movies is kind of part of the job description. Like, you need to go see what's out there.
Yeah.
You need to see what's coming out. You need to see what's trending, what's working, what's not. You know, it could have an influence on what you're doing. It could not have an influence. So sometimes it's really difficult, especially having to pick and choose.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, for me personally, like, I've been relying a lot on streamers recently for movies and stuff like that. But when I do, you know, I am able to pay some good money and to, you know, to go see stuff.
You're saying
I want to go see the stuff that I'm...
Marvel should be safe.
Yeah, like, I want to go see the stuff that I know I'm going to enjoy and that I feel like will be worth my money. Yeah. So, like, with Ant-Man and the Wasp, I enjoyed it.
You're invested in the characters, the timeline now.
It was a little too Rick and Morty for me, but
Felt like a really long Rick and Morty episode.
Overall, I thought it was great. And, like, right now it's sitting at, you know, 47% critic score, but it's got an 83% audience score. So then, you know, I'm not alone. People like the movie. I think it's just one of those things where you keep hearing about superhero fatigue, and I see stuff like this, so I'm like, who's really feeling fatigued? The audience or the critics? Because audience are still going out, are still going to pay, are still
invested. These movies are still making moolah.
Yeah, like, they're still invested with what's to come next. So when I hear superhero fatigue, I'm like, Are you considering the people, or are you just so sick of having to watch superhero movies because you're so fucking full of yourself?
Yeah. Are you jumping on the bandwagon?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing a quick review because, like you said, you're bored of reviewing superhero movies all the time?
Mm-hmm.
That you're trying to convince the masses to not go see these movies, so maybe you get the chance to review something else.
And, like, you know, you coin terms like superhero fatigue. It's like, that could be a thing. There could be people who are genuinely just over superhero movies. And all I have to say to those people, if you're over it, don't fucking watch it.
Mm-hmm.
No one's putting a gun to your head and making you go watch these movies. It's all that's out. No, it's fucking not. It's just what's advertised the most.
James Gunn even he had an interview the other day, and it was posted on his Twitter. It's like his response to superhero fatigue. And he said he just thinks audiences are bored of seeing pretty much the same cookie cutter ABC start, middle, end kind of superhero movies, when actually what they want is emotionally driven, grounded stories, something, you know, relatable, which is why I think Blue Beetle is going to absolutely slap. Because people will relate to it. People related to Shang-Chi as far and as wide as Shang-Chi was, people related to it. The representation of, you know, the Chinese demographic within the MCU is finally getting better. It's not as racist as it was, say, back in like phase one, phase two.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I feel like that's kind of one of those things where, like, you see, like, one of the things that I, you know, the movie Ant-Man and the Wasp isn't perfect, obviously. But, like, one of the things that I always enjoy...
For me, the movie had no heart.
And that's what I was alluding to, where it's like, the first and second Ant-Man movie, in the grand scheme of all of the movies, felt very low scale.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. Because that's what you need for that. And it's like a good break from everything. You don't need everything that's fucking, oh, the Earth is in danger. You don't need that with Ant-Man. You know, you had these two things. You had a heist, and then you had essentially what was another fucking heist.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to this one, and it's like, it's setting up the major, it's not even setting up the big bad, because he was already set up, but it's introducing another version of this big bad who, in all honesty, was kind of wasted in Ant-Man, because fucking him fighting, you know, Kang at the end of it and then kind of beating the shit out of each other, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, knowing the caliber and the might of Kang the Conqueror, he kind of felt out of place for me. I personally would have liked a more smaller scale, but like you said, it lacked heart. Visually, I thought it looked dope. There are some bits that I thought were really funny. But yeah, I just think this is kind of, it's something that needs to be addressed as quickly as possible, because it's one of the biggest things that, you know, people complain about with a lot of the Marvel movies recently. It's like, you know, it's just bombastic for the sake of being bombastic. And it's like, well, yeah, because you need to, you know, up the stakes. It's like, do you? It's like, it peaks and valleys, man. Like, it's okay, you know, Endgame was a peak. You can come down, readjust, and then, you know, and come back up.
Yeah.
Which is what you got to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, but overall, like I said, I still enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And I'm hoping, you know, it progresses. So that's me. What's your next one, dude?
So my last movie is a little movie that came out around Christmas time. I'm pretty sure I saw it. Did I see it last year? I think I did. It wasn't very widely released. Empire of Light. Sam Mendes' follow-up to 1917. It has a critic score of 45, an audience score of 74. So not the biggest gap. But I'm pretty sure where the critics differ in this movie is that they see Sam Mendes directing. They see Olivia Colman and Colin Firth as the two acting leads for the most part, and they see Roger Deakins doing cinematography. Again, like with these other movies, there's an expectation there. There's an expectation of, you know, something on the same grand scale as 1917. When if you see the trailer, it's really not. It is definitely more of a human passion project of, you know, mishandling mental health in 1980s England, which is a very rough time to be in England. If you like, it's set within Brighton, and if you know what happens in Brighton Beach in the '80s, like, it's, you know, you can get caught in some bullshit, and it's like, you know, you're talking a very racist England, a very, you know, an England that's going through depression. The film industry is about to hit an all-time low, and we like, we're watching a, like, this girl struggle with mental health, trying to keep a cinema open. Like, it's like, it's just like, the characters just feel real, the emotion just feels real, everything about it is there. Everything about it for me worked. Toby Jones was great. The new guy they cast as the new Usher, like, I've not seen him in anything before. He was absolutely fucking awesome. And Roger Deakins, man, this guy is like a master manipulator of, you know, light. Like, he'll just put a camera somewhere, and then it's not about what he does with the camera, it's what he does that the camera sees. He's like, oh, it's not yeah, this. I can, like, he can film art with a fucking piece of shit fucking Canon or some shit, but, like, mm-hmm, you know, he has everything at his disposal, and that his disposal is light, and it's just glorious. But I don't know why, like, the audience have this right. The audience is with me. This movie is a good insight as to what the UK was, and not what, and mm-hmm, which is kind of what we're regressing to. You know, in this, like, you know, term for this episode is regression. You know, there's a problem in the UK that we are getting a little bit more racist. The movie industry is on a downward spiral. We are handling mental health in most ages wrong. So this movie, in a look back, is more of a sort of, yeah, it's kind of happening now as well, man. But the critics are out here saying, it's like, oh, for a Sam Mendes movie, it's, you know, this isn't what you expect. What the fuck? You know what this motherfucker did before 1917? Do you know? Fucking James Bond. Fucking Skyfall Inspector. And then he does 1917. And now he does this. Talking about, out here talking about Sam and expectations of Sam Mendes. Go fuck yourself. Your hoity-toity, stiff upper house, chode-stroking little interns trying to get a fucking a bigger job at fucking, I don't want to shit on the Times and the Guardians, but they're the ones out here reviewing these movies like fucking dinglings, yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't be out here like, nah, I'm done, man. I, like, how, like, just go see movies. Just go see movies. Like, if you don't want to go to the cinema, don't go to the cinema. No one's going to make you. I get that there's money problems. Everyone's got money problems somehow. Like, cinema is a treat. So you are welcome to nitpick. But when you're mm-hmm, when you're at home and it's you and the family and you're streaming and you're like, you're deciding what to watch, and someone brings up the argument, oh, well, that's been poorly reviewed. So, it's for free. Fucking watch it. Form your own opinion. We need to, like, Rotten Tomatoes would be so much better if it was just audience score. That's all it needs to be. Like, I'm sick to death of critics, like, just hating on shit because that's what's popular mm-hmm now. We have to be, yeah, there's, like, maybe last year there was too many things that reviewed too well. That have now sort of, after they've gestated a little bit, actually, was it that good? It's like, well, mm-hmm, then maybe some of these movies need to be revisited. This is what it scored when it first came out. This is what it scored a year later. This is what it scored, you know, a few years later. Maybe that would be better. Because, yeah. Like, look at these, some of these Star Wars movies. They come out and they're fucking ridiculed. And then, like, you know, look at, like, what was the movie in between the trilogy this time? Was it The Last Jedi? Was that the very last one? Yeah, The Last Jedi.
The second one.
Rian Johnson's movie.
Force Awakens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one that now has a cult following in Star Wars audiences that people are like, actually, you know, yeah, you can still hate this movie because everyone else did. Actually, it's a Star Wars movie that tried to give us something different, and that's why it got hated. When actually the other two movies are almost shot for shot character arc type remakes of Star Wars movies that we already have. And lo and behold, the audience has spotted it and gone, oh, why didn't you do anything different? It's like, we tried to give you something different and you yelled at us. What do you want? Literally, that is what, like, every time something Star Wars happens, I will post that fucking little notebook moment. That will be my reply. I'll have that saved in my gifts. What do you want? What do you want? And I will go get it for you. Ryan Gosling put it. He put it perfectly.
He knew it. He knew.
But yeah, just I knew I was gonna get triggered. I need a break now. But like the break, you know, we'll come back next week with the next episode. We're going for the long break this time. But we need your last movie. I think I've discovered what it is after. Please don't tell me this movie. Please tell me the audiences liked this movie.
They did.
Okay, thank fuck.
They did. Yeah, so Shazam Fury of the Gods.
Oh, let me guess. The critics didn't like it.
Yeah, critics is 50%, audience score is 86%.
Of course it is.
And I enjoyed the movie. I really liked it. I thought it was...
really enjoyed this movie.
Like, the biggest thing for me was, like, the message of this... Because you forget, like, obviously, he's an adult when he is Shazam, but he's still a kid.
He's still a kid.
Billy Batson's a kid.
These adults literally have to play themselves as two characters. The only one who doesn't is Grace Cullen. But all the other characters, yep. All the other adults, have to act as if they're child counterparts. Children. The one who does it perfectly is the black girl. Can't remember her name.
Megan Good, I think her name is.
Yeah, awesome. She nails it. The little kid and the adult absolutely nail it. I hope they're friends in real life, really. Because, like,
they should be.
Every scene they're in, they absolutely fucking nail. Especially in this new movie. Taste the rainbow. Mm-hmm.
You know what annoys the crap out of me, though, was, like, I didn't get to see it when it came out.
Mm.
So that Wonder Woman cameo was ruined.
Oh, no.
By the fucking, the after... you know, release trailer bits. Yeah. And I was just like, why would you put that in there?
DC, man. Like, because maybe, like, they put that in there because no one was seeing the movie. It got poor reviews. So it was like, oh, how do we get bums in seats? Fucking tell them Wonder Woman's in the movie. That's how we'll get them.
You know what's fucking crazy? Like, they literally just stole that from Marvel. Because I don't know if you remember, like, the trailers for The Incredible Hulk. They bit that bit at the end where Tony Stark comes in was front and center of that fucking trailer. And I'm like, how are you just giving that away? Like, aside from that, I loved it. I think Zachary Levi is phenomenal in Shazam. Like, so I'm excited. I am really annoyed and very much bummed out that there has been no connection between, you know, Shazam and Black Adam, even though they're fucking should be.
You can blame Dwayne Johnson for that one.
Oh no, yeah, for sure. Like, Mr.
I only play with the big boys was,
get the fuck out of here.
That was his quote. He was offered, oh, we'll give you Shazam in Black Adam as long as you do a role in. Mm-hmm. We'll give you Shazam in Black Adam as long as you bring Black Adam to Shazam. His response was, I only play with the big boys. Fucking cunt.
You know that after credit scene where he's like approached about joining the JSA? I don't know if you heard about where that was supposed to be Hawkman and someone else from Black Adam.
Yeah.
And Johnson vetoed that shit.
Yep.
And it's like, I want no association. Motherfucker, look at what you're wearing. You're wearing the association. Oh. Get over yourself.
Yeah. It is a movie that is in limbo. Like, the DC creative changeover did Shazam dirty.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a movie that was already, like, sort of... Yeah, it was okay, the first one. Like, it felt like it didn't really belong in, like, the last sort of timeline. But now, the movie was complete, and James is like, I'm not about to fucking, you know, Batman this. Batgirl. Like, this movie has to come out. So I was like, but why? Where does it sit? Especially with Flashpoint coming out.
Which is just going to reset everything.
It's just going to reset everything. I don't know. Right. I need to leave it there. I'm going to end this episode really weirdly. I need to go and fucking destroy the toilet. My Mexican has gone down weirdly.
All right. On that note, check back in with us next time, guys. Remember to like, share, and subscribe. And we will see you then.
On this trip, now I'm imagining throwing out the scripts.
Come on, man, come join us on the trip.
I'm sorry,
now we're throwing out the scripts.
Ah, we don't charge a penny.
I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.